Welcome, everybody, to episode 8 of SNY.TV's Meet the Mets cast. It is getting a little ugly in here, to say the least. I'm Rob Brender. Going to be joined in a moment by Matt Cerrone and Steve Hofstetter. A quick programming note first, this show will be available as part of the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed. So you can search SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. And definitely subscribe to the feed if you haven't already. We want you to rate us and drop us a review. All right, this has been an ugly, ugly period in Mets baseball. And it probably, yeah, really, to put it lightly, is exactly right. So, guys, as we record today on Thursday, the Mets have dropped 7 in a row. They just got swept in Arizona. Before that, they got swept in Milwaukee. Their bullpen has been a mess. Their starting pitchers can't give any length whatsoever, whether it be just pad performance or concerns about injuries. So it is all added up to just an ugly, ugly period in Mets baseball. Matt, we'll start with you. How are you holding up? I mean, this is obviously really ugly.
Yeah, I mean, I could spend the entire time we're here talking just about this answer. I mean, it's, look at, I am, at the end of the day, I think the big emotion that I have that I'm really most concerned about is I'm a little scared in the sense that, you know, we just spent 6-7 years in this rebuild and we're at this point and like I can't tell if this is just another hiccup for the Sandy Alderson, Terry Collins led, you know, team of pitching with Syndergaard and Harvey and Cespedes in the lineup. You know, this group, Familia, is this just a hiccup on their sort of their ascension back to the World Series, or is this the beginning of the end? Because not because I think they can't overcome the injuries, but because will it just sort of implode on them? And you know how it goes. You know, someone gets fired, there's another injury, this guy gets traded, and then it just unravels. And like, is that what we're watching, or are we watching a hiccup? And like that, for me as a fan, but also as a writer, it's just exhausting and scary to think about because I don't want to have to go through another sort of reorganization. Like, I like this team and they're good and they're talented and I want to see them stay together and see it through. And I'm just really worried that like the wagon's going to come apart before there's a chance for it to happen.
Steve, I want to blame this on injuries. I really, really do, because I do think that is a huge part of this. You can't lose your best hitter, your best starting pitcher, and your best reliever and expect them to be great. But at the same time, Steve, I'm getting the feeling that this goes a little bit deeper than that. There's some team composition stuff here. I mean, you're not seeing anything from Jose Reyes. You're getting more out of the catching spot from your guy who was supposed to be the backup in Rene Rivera than you are from Darno. These were things that you could sort of see coming before the year began. Do you see it that way as well, or do you think that this is really just all because of injuries?
Well, a couple things. I'm going to put a little bit of positive spin on this. First of all, before the 7-game losing streak, we had won 4 series in a row, including against Washington. So that's kind of nice. Also, the really good news is the last 3 games were in Arizona, so no one was there to see it happen. So,
good point.
Yeah. So, I mean, if a tree falls in a forest, did we lose 2 games in a row, 5-4? But the thing that I'm looking at is, you know, you talk about like, yeah, you know, the best hitter, the best pitcher, or the best starter, the best closer. But also, like, there are other, major contributors who are injured as well.
Oh, and sure.
It's not like they're playing pathetically. Like, they're finding ways to lose. But at the same time, in that 7-game losing streak, 2 of those games were lost by 1 run. You know, another couple more were relatively close. It's not like blowouts. They're not, you know, these anemic 1 or 2 run performances that we saw from them in 2015 when they made the World Series. Right. You know, they had that crazy run of just not being able to hit. The problem right now is the pitching, and the pitching is hurt.
Yeah,
it's
agreed.
I think it's all the injuries. I'm willing to blame literally all of it on the injuries because, you know, it's not a one and done scenario. So, you know, when Cespedes and, you know, well, just look at the rotation. I mean, when Syndergaard's out and Matz is out and Lugo's out and this one's out and Familia's out, people are then asked to step up and do different roles, take on different responsibilities. They're basically being put in positions potentially to fail that they might not otherwise be in, and that snowballs. So, like, to me, you're talking about the roster. Like, the roster's incomplete. It's not a roster. I mean, I love the fact that they won all, you know, four in a row and they had that big stretch, but, like, they did that with Familia and with Syndergaard. And, you know, there were other guys on the team, not Tommy Malone. And, right. You know, Hansel Robles or Montero pitching key spots in games that, like, Familia should be in at the top of his game, not with an artery clog and, like, panicking and freaking out over his health. So, like, it all, to me, is injury. I just think it comes down to that. And it's not an excuse, right? Because, like, it is what it is, and time waits for no one. But the fact is, like, they're not the team that should be on the field, but the team on the field has to play. And if they are all of a sudden 15 games under 500, something crazy like that happens, because nobody comes back, like, you know, it's not going to end well.
And we're going to get to the idea of guys shifting roles too when we talk about the bullpen here in just a moment. We go a little bit deeper on that. Steve, you have a question before I get into this part?
I have a question. Which do you think is a better team? The Mets who are healthy right now, or the Mets that are on the DL? Like, if you could only make up teams of that.
Well, it's eight guys on the DL, and
it's eight pretty good guys.
Right, exactly. It's Syndergaard. It's Syndergaard, yeah. Matt, Familia, Cabrera, Cespedes, Darnot, Wright, and then Lugo.
I was going to say, it depends on which David Wright you were getting.
If you took those eight in their prime and put them together, you know, put them together with another 17 garbage players.
They're probably the same record as the Mets.
Yeah, could they beat the 25 that are on the field?
I don't know. It's probably a close call. I mean, it's three quarters of the infield.
It is. Yeah. All right, guys, I have to ask this question.
Sorry.
So how should Mets fans be dealing with this? I mean, I've gotten everything on Twitter.
Alcohol?
They should start selling. Right. Alcohol was part of the responses. Just stop watching. I had a friend of mine who's a big Mets fan text me last night, said something to the effect of, you know, we use baseball as kind of this escape, and now I need an escape from the escape. And I've had people say they should start looking at selling, forget looking at adding. I think it's a little too early for that. But, Steve, I'll go to you with this one. How should Mets fans deal with it? Should they just say, you know what, I'm going to be patient here, I'm going to wait for the guys to get back off the DL and hopefully they make a run, or should it be jump off the cliff time?
Well, last season, everybody jumped off the cliff, and then they made the playoffs. So I don't think it is time to jump off the cliff. And like I said, yeah, a 7-game losing streak sucks, especially with they found a couple ways to lose. They were way ahead in Milwaukee and then lost. They lost in 11 yesterday. Like, you've got that. It's disheartening. But they took four series in a row right before that with half a team. So, like, just give it a minute. Like, I can't stand when people are like, well, this week is terrible, so therefore, just shut up and give it a minute. And you know, if we get to the All-Star break and, you know, and it's 15 games under 500, all right, I get it. But right now, it's still early. There's still plenty of time. And other than the Nationals, who is dominant in this league? No one.
No one. Yeah.
No one. The National League is awful.
There's four teams in the National League over 500. Well, four teams competing in that wild card race, like, that are over 500, I think. Maybe it might be a little bit more today. I don't know. But, yeah, it's open.
And
it's
most
just like,
of them.
Like I'm saying, like, my concern is that it's New York, and the reporters are ready at the switch. They're coming home tomorrow is going to be rough. And there's going to be a lot of questions, and all the reporters are going to be out there from all the different papers. You're probably going to have some national that are going to be ready to just pounce on what's going on here. And, you know, when that happens and questions about Terry and the back pages and the fans start booing, you know, like, it just, we've seen it. It has a way of getting heavy and sinking. And that's when things get nuts. And that's why I keep saying,
yeah,
like,
but in the next, just hold on. If they can just hold
on. Yeah, agreed. That's what I'm going to say this. Like, if they could just hold on and get to that other side of this intact, you know, I think then you could start to add people back and you kind of get beyond it. And then the story takes on a different narrative. I think it'll be okay. But they got
to
get
They need to get right. They need to get Cespedes back. They need to get the big guys back. And let's get into one of the things that I think
Hold on a second. Before we do, okay. Can I add this? In the next 21 games, they're playing, or is it, I think 22 maybe, I counted wrong. In the next 22 games, they're playing four against Milwaukee, and that's the best team they face in those 22 games.
Yeah, but so they haven't played well against bad teams so far this
correct,
year, so
but,
I'm not sure that matters.
But my point is, if we can hold on to that stretch and go 500 through that stretch against some of the worst teams in the league, against San Diego, against Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, six games against Pittsburgh. Like, gotcha. If we can hold on, then, and the players start coming back, then we have a shot.
All right, let's get into one of the reasons that this team has been so bad for the last week or so, and it's been primarily the bullpen. Every team has gone through stretches where their bullpen gives them poor performance. It just seems like the Mets do it in the most heartbreaking of fashion, and whether it be the combination of Familia obviously being gone as a huge cog for this, because as Matt said earlier, that shifts everybody from their designated roles one spot into a bigger and a more needed position. So you're moving everybody up. So Addison Reed becomes the closer, which you feel like he can do just fine. But then all those guys who either weren't going to see a whole lot of innings in the bullpen at all are all of a sudden being given a few more than they should. And the guys who were going to see a decent amount of innings are being put in more high leverage spots. And also, the Mets are having to utilize their bullpen, Terry Collins is, in a way that I don't think pleases fans all that much, and it may not all be his fault. You have starters coming back off of injury, so he's having to use the bullpen a little bit more than he probably wanted to anyway, but guys like Jerry Blevins have been out there now 25 times already this season, which leads the league, so there's a bit of overuse issues here. I don't know exactly where this team stands yet. I don't know if it's fair to gauge them in history as to how awful they've been so far compared to some of the really terrible bullpens the Mets have had in the past, but we're going to do it anyway. Where, Steve, does this team, as far as what we've seen through the first handful of games, the first quarter of the season, where do they stand in terms of awful bullpens in Mets history?
I think they're in the middle, because right now, you know, the starters aren't eating innings at all. And I think that is, it's not just Familia's injury. It's the fact that these guys have to pitch twice as much as a bullpen normally does. Because, a normal bullpen pitches two, you know, maybe a little more than that innings, and they are pitching four per game, which is crazy. So I cannot put it on them right now. I can't even put it on Terry, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I can't even put it on Terry, because you've got to use the bullpen when your starters aren't going. And I don't think he's taking out the starters early. I don't think there's more than three, four games where we're like, why'd you do that? You know, most of them, it's like, oh, thank God he got him out of there. So, right. You know, so I think that there are much worse bullpens than this one.
Okay, including the 2008 team, which everybody, I actually put this online yesterday. I said, hey, we're going to do a little blurb on the bullpen tomorrow on the podcast. Give me feedback on what year you think the Mets have had the worst bullpen in team history. And I don't think most of the people that follow us on Twitter are over the age of like 30, so they don't remember like the 60s, and I don't either. So, of course, immediately everybody goes to 2008. Matt, we were talking about this a little bit online earlier today. That, to you, is the worst bullpen you've ever seen, correct, as far as the Mets go?
Yeah, well, like I said on email, I think it depends on how you define it. You know, if we're talking talent, I'm sure they had, you know, worse talent as a group. But in terms of how bad they performed and impacted the season, yeah, to me, 2008 takes the cake. I mean, like I said in the email, you know, when a first-place team in August has to trade for Luis Ayala to be their closer, you know, yeah. Things are not going well. And, like, that's what they did. And oh my God. And you know, they just, we know it was the back-to-back collapses and all that stuff. And it was just, they fell apart, and like that bullpen just killed them. And so to me, yeah, no question.
The one thing about this bullpen, the bullpen we're watching right now, as I said a few minutes ago, I think Addison Reed can do a fine job as a closer. Yeah. He's done a fine job as a closer in the past. So I have no issue with that spot. You know, you shift him up one role with Familia out now the next 3 to 4 months, and Addison Reed, you feel like, can do a fine job. but it's everything behind him that I am concerned about. And Jerry Blevins, I think if it's lefty on lefty, although he's actually put up great numbers against righties, better numbers against righties last year, I have no problem with him as a specialist. I think he's fine. Other than that, is there anybody, Steve, in this bullpen that you trust? Is there one guy you say, my goodness, I feel good. This guy's coming, and please don't tell me Rafael Montero, because I know that's one guy you don't.
No.
I feel like this Familia guy is going to be good when he comes back.
Well, but he's not there. I mean, right now, who else do you trust?
I am wallowing in pity right now.
Yeah, I know, but I know.
Can I disagree with the 2008 answer?
Sure.
Okay, sure.
Because I do, in your metrics, absolutely, the bullpen who created the biggest problems, because in 2008 they had every reason to go to the playoffs. But if you look at 2004, gross. you've got an okay closer with Braden Looper. You know, you've got Mike Stanton and Ricky Botalico doing behind him. And then you've got 52 games, 46 innings eaten up by John Franco and a 5.28 ERA.
That was the end for Franco.
Sure, but my point is, you know, and then you've got just a rotation of, you know, you've got Dan Wheeler and Tyler Yates and David Weathers and Aaron Heilman and just guys who are supposed to, you know, eat a couple innings here and there that just weren't doing. I think Mike DeJean was probably the best of those guys. But
the 2004 Mets were like that year where they were just coming out of a successful period in their history, right? 99, they started, you know, well, really 98, they started kind of making the run where you thought that they would be a good team for a few years, and then 99, 2000, they made the playoffs in the World Series.
It was the last Art Howe year. It was 71 and 91, and that was, you know, Duquette.
Right.
Was, you know, GM.
Right. Just things were, they were on the way from being a successful team for a few years into a bad patch again before they ultimately wound up being good again a few years later. So that was sort of that middle time. I agree with you. 2004 was ugly. 2008 was ugly. And this has been really, really ugly thus far. And I know I just mentioned Rafael Montero. If I see Rafael Montero on the mound again in the big leagues, it's a nightmare. It is a nightmare, Matt. He does not belong in a big league uniform.
Throwing BP. He's throwing BP.
And he is.
So the important thing in your question is you're saying the bullpen, right? Like, individually, they're actually very talented guys. And a lot of it, we were happy to have in the bullpen at the start of the year. So, like, the individual, I mean, Jerry Blevins is still on pace to throw 100 games. So, like, they're overexposed. And so we, as you know, sitting in the stands or at home on our television, like, we're watching the game. But the reality is that he may have been up, you know, two times or the night before, and like all that, because they're pitching four innings, like Steve said, and like all that compounds and is because, and I'm going to go back to my first point, the injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, from the bullpen themselves to the guys who, or the guy who walks out of the dugout and calls for them to leave the bullpen and come to the mound, and the one who catches the attention, it seems, every single game of some fan on Twitter who wants to complain about something that he did, Terry Collins. Barring a postponement of firing, the apocalypse, TC is going to manage his 1,013th Mets game and surpass Davey Johnson on Saturday against the Angels as the leader in Mets franchise history in games managed, which is actually kind of amazing to me that they haven't had a manager there for a long enough stretch to surpass what even Davey did back in the day. There have been good memories, I think, in my opinion. There's been some great memories of Terry Collins, and there have also been some nightmarish ones for stuff we've seen on the field, decisions that he's made. Matt, we'll start with you. Favorite Terry Collins memory?
I think it's the first spring training. Our producer on this podcast, Jeff Goldman, and I were down there when he was first hired. In that first spring training, when he came in, it was a breath of fresh air, number one. But, you know, this old timer with, you know, hustling and running around from field to field, you know, just really sparking energy and just kind of brought this different attitude and just sort of the different style to the Mets. And he had this throwback kind of old school vibe to him and, you know, barking orders at everybody and a big smile and just a ton of energy despite his age. And like that to me always just really stuck because it said a lot about, I think, his vigor and sort of his goals and motivation and everything. And you know, I think everybody at the time thought he was just going to be that, you know, he was going to babysit the transition as it was put to me by people in the front office back then. You know, and this did not look like a guy that was going to do that. This looked like somebody wasn't going anywhere and wanted to be around, and he has been. And, you know, for better or worse, he's a good man, and he's got a really interesting history. And, you know, I love listening to him talk. I would sometimes question, I think, like a lot the stuff he does on field. But, you know, he's just, I love his attitude, and I like when he gets fired up. When he's in a press conference talking, he's like, Rob, you've asked him a question. It almost feels like you're getting lectured by your grandfather sometimes. Like I get almost nervous, like I'm going to get grounded because he just has the way he looks in the eye. Like he's just an interesting cat. And like, I don't know. I like him.
He does. He's a fiery guy. I'm with you. I love the personality. Steve, before I go on my bit about Terry, what's your favorite memory of him so far?
Well, I just think speaking of fired up, what he did right before the turnaround last year, when he basically, you know, it was a can't anybody play. You know, it was that type of speech where he admitted that everything was going wrong, which was wonderful. And then they started winning and they had that crazy, crazy win streak. And, it you know, just after that, it seemed like a team can't lose. And that's the thing about Terry. You know, a lot of people get on him for the in-game decisions. And look, there are definitely some that are poor. But give me a choice between a manager who is a brilliant tactician and a manager who's a clubhouse guy, and I will take the clubhouse guy every single time. Now, granted, you especially want one that's both, but at the same time, who is both? Even Joe Maddon made one of the dumbest decisions last year that almost cost the Cubs the World Series. And so it is very rare to find both, and I'll take the clubhouse guy.
Yep, agreed with you. And I have a similar thought that Matt did, which is watching him at spring training has been every year that I went down with you guys to cover the team during spring training has been the most exciting thing to me about Terry. It's just the energy that he brings every single day running around the field. He's the oldest manager in baseball, and you couldn't tell. I mean, he has so much vigor, so much energy. And as Matt said, when you get him in a room and whether it's a press conference or if it's a one-on-one opportunity with him, He gives you there's a little bit of that fear, but at the same time, I love the passion that he speaks with. You know, he's fiery all the time, and he can tell some great stories. And I remember one day I was in the dugout at Dodger Stadium covering a game for us, and I was with Terry. There was nobody else around, nobody in the stands. This is a couple hours before the game. And he was telling me a story about the Dodgers. Of course, he loves the Dodgers. He has a passion for the organization. He came up in that organization. He was in it for I don't even remember how many decades. I want to say 20 or plus years as a Dodger, either farmhand or working in the organization. And he told some stories to me that day just about the team and working for them and all the cities he had been in. And I loved it. I loved it. So that's the thing that stands out to me about Terry.
Just real quick before we move on, I think it's – I don't want to be insensitive to the fan at home that's just judging him based on what they see on field and all those things, because, like, there obviously are those, you know, legit concerns. But, like, if we're talking about – which I think we're sort of talking about, you know, the opportunity to talk with him and talk baseball with somebody who, you know, has been through every experience in the game pretty much, like – it's pretty cool to like listen to that perspective and hear those stories. And, you know, as it doesn't pertain to the Mets, but as it just pertains to being a baseball fan, like it's pretty cool to talk to, I gotta say.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So that's the positive side of Terry Collins. Sort of what you were just talking about, Matt, that there's, you know, fans that think that he's the worst manager they've ever seen. I certainly wouldn't put him in that category. But where do you, as far as like a memory goes, things, something that stands out to you in the past where you said, Terry, what in the world are you doing if there is only one?
I think it was really last year, the end of last year, there was a point where what he was saying was completely out of touch with what was actually happening. So there was an instance, the Jerry Blevins one always comes to mind, where he made a comment about something about how Blevins, he didn't use Blevins because he had a wrap on his arm or something. And so he didn't use him that game, even though they needed a lefty in like a specific spot. And reporters said to Blevins, why didn't he go to you? And Blevins said, I don't know, I'm fine. So they asked Terry, and he had said, oh, my elbow. Or he said, Blevins had a wrap on his elbow. And they went back to Blevins, and Blevins said, I wear that all the time. Like, I always have that on. That is a problem. You know what I mean? Like, those little things So there were a lot of those at the end of last year, whether it was because
communications, right?
Yeah, and it was just that, that to me, though, that stretch, it was like a, you know, 1 month, 6 week stretch where there was like five of those things. You know, Conforto, it was Jay Bruce. He thought Jay Bruce was faster than, you know, Wilmer Flores or so. I can't remember what it was, just like something glaring that like anybody would know. And that stuff bothered me, and that rubbed me the wrong way. And I, that's a concern. But to me, that's the bench coach. That's the rest of the staff. So like, you know, but to get back to just specifically his role, like I think any statistical person will tell you that managers only really impact at the end of the day, like one or two wins a year. Maybe it's a little bit more, maybe it's a little bit less, depends on, you know, how things shake. So, you know, I think we get overly obsessed with sort of the role that they play on field because, you know, ultimately it comes down to execution, et cetera, et cetera. But like, so to me, and this was Steve's point before, like I think in New York, that player manager is so much important. I think that's why he still has his job.
Gotcha. Steve, one thing that stands out that you didn't like about TC or some move that he made?
I mean, how could any – I don't know how any of us could answer anything other than the Matt Harvey game in the World Series.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was – because it wasn't just a bad decision. It was a bad decision. It was not being the manager. It was letting the player be the manager, and that was a huge problem. What pitcher is, you know, other than Ginny Baker on the first episode of Pitch, what pitcher – is going to take themselves out of a game? It doesn't happen, especially a World Series. And so the idea that he was just like, yeah, sure, if Harvey says he could pitch, he could, like, just, you need to know better. You're the manager.
Absolutely. All right, Steve.
It's such a results-oriented thing, though. So, like, and that's always a problem with managers, is that you can have the right move that goes wrong or the wrong move that goes right, and that's what makes baseball, I love it. That's why it's great to talk about.
Unless yeah, absolutely.
You're hoisting the World
time.
Series trophy at the end of the year, it's hard to be a manager that everybody loves.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the way I look at it. I mean, look, if you don't win every year, people are going to say, we need a new manager. It's not good enough.
Well,
you know,
generally,
that's the way it goes.
When people boo the manager without thinking about it, it's the equivalent of, like, you know, when you watch the NFL draft and every pick gets booed because people think that they know what they're doing. You know, and I know you want to be sensitive to the fans at home, but at the same time, look, I don't know Terry personally. I've never interviewed him. I've never met the man. And I like him because I like that players want to play for him. And that is a huge difference from some of the people that we've had in the past.
So
no question.
So there's a real important contrast here. I know we got a rush, but like, this is an important comparison. So Willie Randolph was not a very good in these situations. So just as a comparison, Willie used to get bothered, used to get to him, that he would get questioned, let's say, for a bullpen move because he knew, the pitcher had a hangover, right? But he couldn't say that, right? But he would get bothered because you're questioning my authority, reporters are questioning me, and he would get defensive. It got to a point where he would then say, very off the record or on back, go ask so-and-so, you know, what he was doing last night. Now you're throwing guys under the bus, and it creates, and that is not being a player's manager. And like, for all of Terry's criticism on field, he does that exceptionally well, you know, when he's at the mic and how he handles the players and the reporters. He guards and protects them and guides the story and does those things to protect them in a way that, like Steve said, other managers have not. And like, it's a nuanced thing that we never get to see. We only hear about. And, you know, Willie's an example, like great baseball mind, super smart, unbelievable experience, but just wasn't very good at that part of the gig. And in New York, it ultimately almost always comes down to that.
All right, quick yes or no, Matt. Does Terry Collins make it through 2017 as the Mets manager?
The only way he doesn't is if there's something embarrassing going on and they're playing so badly, then no. But if they're holding water and they're just treading along, yes, he's under contract, or his contract's up, but they love him. You know, they'll make the move.
So yes is the answer, likely, right?
Yeah, answer is yes, because I really don't think they're going to implode. But I mean, if the wheels really come off and everybody's laughing at them and they're the absolute laughing stock of baseball, it wouldn't shock me if he's gone.
Gotcha. Steve, yes or no?
I think he makes it through the season.
Okay. And I'm with you guys. I believe he makes it through the season. I think he's earned that. You get to the postseason back-to-back years. You deserve at least a full season. Once again, folks, you can find us on the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed. Search for SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. Sad day, guys, for my youth. I know we're not a music show. I do want to mention this, though. Chris Cornell, I grew up listening to Soundgarden. I know you guys did, too. One of my favorite bands. So sad to hear about the passing of Chris Cornell last night. So I'll be listening to Soundgarden all day as I weep away the sorrows of what's going on with the Mets, too. We will see everybody next week.